Well, a new Metropolitan Planning Council analysis shows that segregation is having a profound economic impact on our region. Last month, we talked about the costs associated with living separately. Tonight, we talk about how segregation, white flight, and poverty seem to be indicators for job loss. Essentially, jobs and specifically job creators tend to leave an area when white people do. Interesting insights in this analysis. Let's take Calumet City, for example. From 2000 to 2010, Calumet City saw its white population drop by more than 60%. And if you look at job loss since 2010, they've lost 30%, while the rest of the region increased by 12%. This is a telling stat. In most of the regions analyzed in Illinois, there are 420 jobs for every 1,000 residents. In Calumet City, 160 jobs for every 1,000 residents. It's worth a conversation on the impact of who lives where and what job opportunities are available. In studio with me tonight, Alden Laurie. He's the Director of Research and Evaluation with the Metropolitan Planning Council. Alden, good to see you.
Same here, Justin. Thanks for having me.
And also joining us in studio, Rob Perrell. He's a demographer and consultant with Rob Perrell and Associates. Rob, thanks for being here as well.
Thank you so much.
So, I mean, talk about this, because this is really continuing the what we talked about last month, is sort of the hidden costs of segregation. What took you down this path to talk about job loss?
I was curious about, as the region is kind of shifting, as Chicago's, that's part of our story, right? Not just the 50s, 60s, and 70s, when we saw the south and west sides of the city essentially turn from white to black. We still see shifting demographic patterns out in the suburbs. And the Southland is one area that has become increasingly African-American over the last 30 or 40 years or so. So I was curious to see if there are other kinds of changes that are happening there. And so jobs is one way. And I saw jobs as an indicator kind of the economic vitality of an area. Hmm. You know, if there are jobs there, it's generally thought to be a strong area. If jobs are growing, it's getting stronger. If jobs are falling, then it's getting weaker. And so in looking at those numbers, I started seeing a pattern in terms of where jobs were declining or weren't growing very fast, and largely communities that are known to be majority black, majority Latino, particularly in the south and to some degree in the western suburbs. And then when I overlaid that with population loss from 2000 to 2010, particularly for whites, then I started seeing a very interesting kind of connection.
And you're talking about, when we say job creation, we're talking about it could be anything from factories to retail to small businesses, things like that.
Yeah, and I didn't look explicitly at who the job creators were, but just, you know, the job totals themselves. I did look a little bit at this particular industry, so I have an idea of what the picture is like in some of these places. It's an interesting trend. And I haven't yet found what might be a very kind of clear explanation as to why we're seeing that. But generally speaking, when we see white population fall, there is an economic impact that happens as a result of that.
Rob, let's bring you in. Go ahead.
So, Justin, my take on Alden's very good research is that a lot of the jobs that go are retail jobs. And I'll tell you what the story is that, in the United States and in Chicago, the biggest predictor of your income level is your race. And so whites have a disproportionate amount of access to resources and income, okay? So when you have white flight and you have whites depart an area, mm-hmm. you lose a base of customers for retail jobs, okay?
You lose and expendable income, too.
You lose expendable income. You're losing people with money in their pocket to go out to eat dinner every night, if that's what they do. You know, fill out their car completely instead of filling their gasoline tank half the way, et cetera. And so so when you, and this is again goes back to the problem of segregation. When you segregate like this, when you pull out a group that unfairly already has too much access to resources, you are left behind with populations that don't have a lot of resources and can't sustain an economic base.
Rob, I was reading the article that you were in with Greg Hines and Cranes just about the median income of Chicago, according to the census, is pretty stagnant, in a good way, meaning it hasn't really changed. And you go, oh, the economy may be recovering. We're better than other places. But when you drill down into communities, into different neighborhoods, into, as we've talked about, the sort of hidden costs of segregation, you'll see one area of the region doing well and other areas doing not as well.
This is the story of Chicago. We're sitting here in the Loop right now, and just a few blocks south of us is the South Loop that has booming population, high incomes. You go a few blocks south of that to the Douglas community area. You get south of 26th Street or so, and you're in an area where 40% of the population is below poverty, right? So so right next to each other, wealth and degradation, mm-hmm. you know, poverty, lack of income. That is a story of Chicago, and you can just cross the street and see the difference.
It's amazing, and I mean, it's interesting to know that we've had this story, we've told this story about Chicago, and you know, we're very familiar with the idea of you can go a couple blocks and see inequality, but when you're talking about the suburbs, and you're talking about regions, especially Southland, it starts to get to, you know, it seems the one thing we keep coming back to is race.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, the interesting thing, too, is that if you drill down a little closer, let me start here. There's a ripple effect in terms of that loss of income, that loss of white population. And Calumet City is, I think, a really clear example of this with the River Oaks Shopping Center. That shopping center itself has also kind of gone through a transition. You know, what was a very mostly white consumer base shopping there in the 70s and 80s and kind of became racially mixed in the 90s is now almost solidly an African-American shopping base. And it's not just that white people in the area, the immediate area, are leaving, but white shoppers who might be in the surrounding areas, as that mall's character, racial character has changed, those shoppers are no longer going there as well. So mm-hmm. when you have the white population loss, there's also this ripple effect in terms of the level of comfort or familiarity with the mall itself for whites who are in the surrounding areas. And so that's an added kind of the market is even smaller now for that mall, and that mall has suffered. The Lincoln Mall had went through that maybe a little earlier, and it's closed now because it had become, again, dependent upon a almost solely black consumer base, and it just wasn't enough income there to support it. Now, that's not to say that there isn't black income out there. And that's the other thing I think people have to kind of keep in mind. When you look at some of these South suburbs, Country Club Hills, Calumet City, when those became kind of booming destinations for the black middle class in the 80s and 90s,
right.
those places were still solidly okay economically. But that picture has changed to some degree now that the white middle class population that was in those suburbs is now gone. And so the suburbs can't really support themselves to the degree that they could, but that's not because they are necessarily impoverished areas. But if we characterize them that way and people avoid those areas to shop, avoid those areas to live, we're kind of writing the future of those communities
and sort of following the history of this town, especially when it comes to segregation, did the same thing over and over and over. You know, Rob, I want to ask just the concept. I mean, as you think about this city transforming itself, like any big city, we see, you know, different neighborhoods turn into different population, yeah. different ethnicities. You know, the gentrification plays a role. Why do we continue to come back to this idea that even though that happens, we still are one of the most segregated cities in the world?
Well, you know, I'm glad we're talking about the suburbs, too, because when we talk about the Cook County suburbs, go back a few decades, they were much more homogenous. They didn't have the issues we're talking about of segregation and economic lows and highs, whereas that was all a city story. But actually, poverty in the suburbs and disparities between rich and poor and white and black is now a story of the suburbs. And there's a funny thing. Chicago is kind of like a shirt being turned inside out, and I'll tell you what I mean by that, despite the fact that, you know, we sure have poverty here. There are some ways in which the city looks better than the suburbs for some populations. I did some research recently that showed that whites in Chicago, for the first time in history, are wealthier than whites in the suburbs or downstate Illinois.
Hmm.
So the locus of our concern about poverty, about the effects of segregation, they've moved to the suburbs. That's where a lot is happening.
Our sentiments, are we catching up with that emotionally? I mean, when we think about that, because, you know, everything that we, as human beings, we stereotype and we stigmatize, but we always think, you know, someone living in Hinsdale is going to have more money than someone living in Lakeview. I mean, are we catching up to changing that story?
My goodness, the DuPage suburbs used to be the bedroom suburbs par excellence, but they are suburbs of, a lot of them of poverty and of low income now. It's a very different landscape than we had years ago. Suburbs, it's more of a challenge in some ways because in Chicago, in a city, you've got a large infrastructure to potentially bring resources to a problem. When you're broken apart into 50 different suburbs in an area, every single area on its own fights this.
Well, you know, the Metropolitan Planning Council, Mary Sue was in here, we talked about the idea of there being too many units of government, and that's been something that we've seen state politicians take on and want to change because it's just – and this is one of the problems where you can't throw money at certain problems when there's so many – you're the unit of government, then you know, there's no shared resources. And we talk about the big issues, and the governor has talked about this too, property taxes in the Southland area and the South suburbs. I mean, they're crippling. In the way that they're basing it on this idea that this once was a prominent, had resources, the middle class area, and it just doesn't reflect that anymore.
Yeah, I mean, when things are good, the fact that we've got 300 municipalities in the region is not so much of an issue. But when things are tough, that becomes a real problem. And so you have some communities, particularly in the Southland, where you really have to ask the question now, are these places viable enough to kind of pull themselves out of the hole they're in? And the property taxes is their number one enemy in trying to answer that question, because as those rates are very high, as the appreciation of the property there has really slowed, and in some places it's tracking the wrong direction, the extension is still the same, but the rates are higher, and that's a big kind of black eye in terms of attracting residential, commercial investment, industrial investment. Places are like, well, I'm going to go, you're right across the border from Indiana. Mm-hmm. You've got the city of Chicago that has much more viable places to build, a much lower property tax rate. And those places start kind of competing with one another, and it just becomes a very ugly situation. And I think, the question for a lot of those places, and there's been posed recently in a Chicago Mag story where I was quoted in about annexation. Should some of those places open themselves up to being annexed by the city, or combining one another? And I think that is a question that those communities should start and talking about more.
And this is something that we've known in the area. I think of Gary, Indiana, as an example of a town that as a majority black population that wants to be a town that can be a middle class hub and bring businesses in. Is there hope for majority black Southland suburbs to take on that person, to say, hey, we are a middle class suburb, and we're going to try to attract jobs and job creators here, not unlike what we see in some of the suburbs with grocery stores, or not suburbs, in the South Side communities with grocery stores? Is there a glimmer of hope that they could sort of attract businesses, or is it just trending in the wrong way?
I would say there's a glimmer of hope. South Holland is one place where I'd point out, among the majority black communities that were in the analysis that I did, 7 out of 8 of them were either losing population or losing jobs or losing both. 6 out of the 8 were losing jobs. South Holland was the only that was gaining population and gaining jobs. And so South Holland is doing something that is still working for it. It is still a solidly black middle class town. But they've got to hold on to who they've got, and they've got to continue doing the work, the real hands-on work that appears to be happening on the ground there to kind of keep investment and draw investment in there. If you go across the border, there's an interesting thing happening. There's a fairly large number of black middle-class families from Chicago, from Cook County, that are crossing the border, and they're going to places like Merrillville. They're going to places, other places over there in Indiana. Now, Indiana's tax picture is different than what you find on the Illinois side, but I think those are places, maybe they aren't majority black places now, but there are places in the Southland or the southwestern suburbs that could draw black middle class families.
Rob, as a demographer, and I'll end with you, this concept of white flight, and we've seen it, it's so historic here in the city of Chicago, city proper, to see it sort of playing out in suburbs. Do you ever see a time when that will stop, or that the demographics of that will change?
Yeah, the demographics of that are going to change eventually. Whites have been leaving Illinois for since 1950, by the way. So there's been white flight for a long time. Used to be from the city, now it's from the suburbs. But the other thing going on with whites that's actually really dramatic, even though it's a kind of thing that's hard to put your finger on, which is the aging. White households have fewer people in them. They're more often headed by a single older adult or two older adults. So the demography of whites in the Chicago area is really changing. I tell you, go out to, again, the DuPage suburbs, Downers Grove. You look at the median age of the white people in Downers Grove. It's way up there. Hmm. They raised kids 10, 20 years ago. Those kids are elsewhere. And then on the other hand, the other extreme, there's, the story of kind of the north side of Chicago. You got a lot of young white professionals that have moved here from out of state to get some of the jobs that are downtown. So the white population itself has got kind of a pretty wacky demographic and set of trajectories going on.
Fascinating conversation. Rob Perrell is a demographer and consultant with Rob Perrell and Associates. Alden Lurie is a director of research and evaluation with the Metropolitan Planning Council. We continue our series of talking about the hidden costs of segregation on our city and the area in which we live. Love to have you guys back, continue the conversation. Thanks for being my guest tonight.